There's a standard rule of thumb that works fairly well for most of the time. It's what I call the basic childhood rule of linguistic learning. The premise for this rule is that if something bears certain identifying features that we have agreed upon in advance, then we know what we will call that thing. For example, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck and waddles like a duck, then it must be a duck. If it doesn't meet this basic criteria, then it's probably not a duck. But if it does meet this criteria, then by conventional acceptance, we agree that the word duck refers to a feathered reality that has webbed feet, waddles, and quacks. Now, if we all follow this basic childhood rule of linguistic learning, then our communication with one another should always be meaningful and rewarding. But sometimes, that's just not the case, which is why there's a wealth of books with titles like You Just Don't Understand Me, or Women Are from Venus and Men Are from Mars. Or it explains the huge demand in our culture for self-help and communication skill advice from the Dr. Phils of the world. After all, not everything we encounter is as easy to identify as a duck. Deciding that a duck is a duck is a duck is a different kind of challenge entirely than deciding which traits identify, say, for goodness or happiness or love. If it feels like magic and sounds like a dream and acts like mystery, then it must be love, right? As I said, not everything is as easy to identify as a duck. The basic childhood rule of linguistic learnings, notwithstanding, communication can be a real challenge at times, especially when we try to speak about things that matter to us. So allow me to suggest that there's another dynamic that can often complicate communication between us, and I have called this the golden hawk factor. Not that long ago, my wife Nancy and I were hiking together in one of our favorite spots in southern Utah. We were hiking the Grand Staircase in Escalante when, stopping to take a break to drink some water and slice an apple to share, when in the sky, over the glorious scenic vista before us, Nancy spotted a bird soaring in the thermals above us and asked me if what she was seeing in the sky was an eagle. Our conversation went something like this. Large brown body with a golden head. No, I'd say that's more reddish brown. And Nancy said, yellow beak and a huge wingspan. Nah, it doesn't seem that large to me, and it's beak more white than yellow. I think what we're seeing is a red-tailed hawk. Well, after a few more minutes of this give-and-take conversation, I turned my gaze from the western sky where I was looking to see where Nancy was looking in the southeastern sky. True enough, when I looked at the bird she was following in the sky, it was a golden eagle, a very rare sight in southern Utah, while I, with my gaze in the western sky, had indeed been watching the more common sight of a red-tailed hawk soaring on the thermals. As I looked at where Nancy was gazing in the southeastern sky, it became evident to me that our attempt to share an amazing experience together and to be able to communicate with each other about it, that it failed. Sadly, for all of us, such a failure to communicate is not that unusual. It happens more frequently than the rare sighting of a golden eagle. Even if we carefully observe the basic childhood rule of linguistic learning and take fully into account the golden hawk factor, communication often remains uncertain as an undertaking for any one of us, especially when it concerns matters that are very, very meaningful and important to us. Care and caution are critical at this juncture. For example, is the God that one person believes in the same kind of being as the God that another individual repudiates? More directly to the point of my sermon this morning, is the dimension of spirituality that one person seeks the same sort of experience that another individual might shy away from. Maybe. But then again, maybe not. My sermon is occasioned by this reality. As this remarkable Unitarian Universalist Church here in Foothills continues its growth and its prosperity, as it increases its small group ministries and its adult religious exploration efforts, and as the Sunday morning worship services continue to evolve to meet this congregation's changing worship needs, it behooves all of us to pay attention to a growing majority among us who are seeking a deeper awareness of and a connection to the things of the Spirit. And yet, I also recognize that seeking a deeper sense of the spirituality is not on the personal agenda of some of us here. My query is this: when we speak of spirituality, are we talking about the same creature? Or is your golden eagle my red-tailed hawk? I must confess, I've been struck by how all who speak of spirituality, myself included, often falter when it comes to specifying exactly what is meant by spirituality. And yet I would maintain that when we better understand what is meant by spirituality, it can be a powerfully positive experience. And I would go so far as to say that I believe all of us need more of just such a powerfully positive experience in our living days. But first things first. A dictionary definition is as good a place as any to begin with the meaning of a word that might be at issue. Spirituality is a noun that no one will be surprised to learn, I think, means the state, quality, or fact of being spiritual. Spiritual, in turn, is an adjective that means of or relating to or consisting of or having the nature of the Spirit, not tangible or material. And the second definition from the dictionary reads, of, concerned with, or affecting the soul. One can define spirituality as a state of being concerned with one's spirit or soul. And this continues to work as an explanation until we inquire just what it might mean to be concerned. It is here that the potential for frustration and miscommunication begins. American theologian Frederick Buechner has written, "The word spirit has something pale and shapeless, like an unmade bed. School spirit, the American spirit, the spirit of 76. Each of these points to something you know is supposed to get you to your feet, cheering, but which you somehow cannot rise to." The adjective spiritual has become downright offensive. If somebody recommends a person as spiritual, you tend to avoid him, and usually with good reason. Inspiring is even worse. Inspirational is worse still. Inspirational books are invariably for the birds. Buechner continues, "Like its counterparts in Hebrew and Greek, the Latin word spiritus originally meant breath, as in expire, respiratory. And breath is what you have when you're alive and what you don't have when you're dead. Thus, spirit equals breath equals life, the aliveness and the power of your life. And to speak of a woman's spirit or soul is to speak of the power of life that is within her. When the spirit of a woman is unusually strong, the life in her is unusually alive. She can breathe it out into others' lives, becoming literally inspiring. When I speak of the search for spirituality, I have something very specific in mind, something that we all share because it is what makes us human. Each one of us has a basic need to somehow nourish our spirits as well as we do our bodies. Each of us must somehow nurture the power of life that moves within us at the core of our being. Each of us feels at times that deeper hunger of the souls for sustenance. Is that not why we've gathered here this morning? Regardless of what the name one might provide for this profound sense that life is more than food and drink, it attracts more and more individuals to places like this, where the hope is to find soul food on the menu. I'm indebted to my colleague and dear friend, the Reverend Dr. Galen Gingrich, who's the senior minister of our All Souls Church in Manhattan. When he turned me on to speaking about soul rather than speaking about spirit, though admittedly I still tend to use both terms interchangeably. And like Galen, I'm beginning to use the term soulcraft, which is an understanding that he took from the writings of eco culturists Bill Plotkin and Thomas Berry. Soulcraft, that's a good description of what transpires in religious communities like this Foothills congregation of ours. For it's here that we nourish the soul. Spirituality as soulcraft, to my way of thinking, is what religious communities and religious people do. Yet, as attractive as the term soulcraft sounds to me, I'm still left with the same question. What constitutes it? What exactly could be added to a Sunday morning worship service or to my life generally in order to nourish my soul? What sort of awareness or experience might provide shape and sustenance to each one of you, to your souls? What experiences can you identify that will cause your souls to soar? For the sake of clarity, permit me to somewhat oversimplify and suggest that all of your and my life experiences fall into one of two broad categories. In fact, it's probably more accurate to say that all of our experiences move between two poles of a continuum. The first broad category of experience includes all of those experiences in which we, as individuals, express our creativity. As human beings, you and I were inherently creative. We remake ourselves and our environments in very dramatic ways. We paint a picture or write a poem or plant a garden or sing a song or ride a bike or make a speech or play a tune or write a check or run a mile or hit a baseball, knit a sweater, or make a decision. We're creative as human beings, and we're creative in our ability to make things happen, to order our environment in certain ways. For this becomes a key element in the way in which we understand ourselves and our self-worth. Our self-esteem as individuals depends upon just such a freedom to be creative. That's why, as Unitarian Universalists, and to restate one of our most cherished faith principles, we gather and come together in religious community to affirm and promote the inherent worth and the unique dignity of each and every human being. My worth, my dignity as an individual, depends upon my freedom to make a difference. Sometimes that difference will be substantial. Usually it will be small. But always it will be a difference that I alone make. As a gathered religious community, we have enormous respect for the creative movement of the human spirit. We often give our highest accolades to those individuals who stamp their very own image deeply in the world around them. Even this very tendency to ascribe worth and dignity unevenly illustrates my point. To be human, is to be creative. The human spirit moves from within itself to make a difference in the world that you and I share. So the first category of the human experience, the first pole on that continuum, is the movement outward, the movement of supreme creativity. The second broad category of human experience, the second pole, is the reverse of the first. As human beings, we live intimately in the world. And sometimes the world stamps its image deeply upon us, rather than the other way around. We listen to a symphony or watch a sunset or read a book or suffer an accident or hike in the mountains or watch a play or we fall ill or absorb the warmth of the sun or lose our job or hear a bird sing. These experiences and others like them make a difference in each of us, sometimes substantial, sometimes small, but always it's a difference a change. In them, we see not the outward movement of our spirits to create a world, but an inward movement of the world to recreate us. Of course, we're not without choice in this, except when it comes to matters such as illness or accident or job loss. But even when we can choose to be agents of our own recreation, the effect is not one of our making. We must allow the music or the sunset or the hurt or the majestic scenery of the Rockies to have their way with us. And this can be difficult. This can be tough. But it's a necessary and vital part of maintaining the health of our souls. In his well-known book, To a Dancing God, Notes of a Spiritual Traveler, philosopher and popular author Sam Keen makes the following observation. This obsession, he writes, with controlling culture blinds us to the necessity for alternate styles of perception and of life. If we're unable to surrender control, to appreciate, to welcome, to wonder, to allow things and persons to speak with their own voice, we are condemned to perpetual aggression, to an unrelaxing Promethean effort to master the environment. No doubt there is a time for speaking, for dialect, for control. But there's also a time for silence, for wonder, for surrender. It is this time that we are in danger of forgetting in our contemporary world. What I want to suggest is that we need moments of creation and of recreation. The human soul, given its freedom, will both create and recreate. And as Keen has noted, it is those moments of recreation that are most at risk. They can be ignored, held at arm's length, and they will go away. At least most of them will. But at what a high cost. Sam Keen again. I'm tired of being hard, tight, controlled, tensed against the invention of novelty, armed against tenderness, afraid of softness. I'm tired of directing my world, making, doing, shaping. Tension is ecstasy in chains. The muscles are tightened to prevent trembling, nerves strained to prevent trust or hope or relaxation. Earlier, as the reading, one of the readings for this morning, I shared a portion of Max Shapiro's insightful essay where the rabbi echoes Keen's concern and states that our journeys through life should be seen as sacred pilgrimage, opportunities to expand and deepen our souls. And that same contention is put forth in that other reading that I shared, Cavafy's Ithaca, one of my favorite poems, where the poet asserts that our journey through life will be both mysterious and paradoxical, but yet it will also be very real. Cavafy's contention is that, in large measure, the meaning or essence of life is answered by the creative and the recreative moments that one experiences on this journey itself. For me, myself, I want to be open on this human journey to the creative power of life, as well as being open to the recreative power inherent in life. For me, that means recognizing that creativity also resides in other people, in other events. It means opening my soul to those experiences and to those individuals that can make a difference that's real, a difference that's significant and substantial for my life, in my own religious journey, in my own sacred pilgrimage. I want to emphasize that this is a crucial part of what it means to be fully human. And that's also the important part of what happens here on Sunday mornings. This space is not a lecture hall or a classroom. It's not a meeting of the League of Women Voters or the Friends of the Library. This is a place of congregating of a religious community, and it's what we're about here. The central element in our life together that distinguishes our congregating from any other gathering that we might be a part of is soulcraft. While you and I meet in this space sacred to creativity, crafting recreation and creation, our children are across the way, learning to talk about and to evaluate their own experiences of their young lives, firming up those values, those convictions that will add to their skill set as they grow and change and progress in their individual religious development and their spirituality. As they learn to become aware of and to recognize those moments of life where creation and recreation touch their spirits, nourish their souls. In this place here, together we seek, among other things, an experience that will nourish our souls. We seek a sense of being connected with something larger than ourselves, a sense of life's sacred dimension. At times this means that we feel ourselves addressed by a power that may be profoundly, mysteriously, or magnificently energizing. At other times, we may feel the oppressive weight of life's darker side when pain and sorrow and suffering comes. But yet we're here because we know that somehow life is more than food and drink, and it's more than stamping our own image on everything we see. Because we're human, we need to also slow down. We need to wait sometimes, give ourselves over to wonder, to appreciate, to experience awe, to feel connected, to feel renewed. Spirituality as soulcraft, crafting the soul of individuals, the soul of a community. That's what religious communities and religious people do. For in all truth and honesty, is that not why you and I are here in this place together? I think so. I hope so. So may it be. Amen.